The biblical resurrection program is something that fits the prophetic theme and has a wide coverage in the scriptures. I want you to think, first of all, about 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 1 through 8, and then verses 20 through 23. We're not going to read all of these verses today. I'm just giving them to you so that you have them because of the time's sake. But this is the central passage. Paul argues that if Christ had not been raised, then faith is futile. He calls Christ the first fruits, ensuring the resurrection of believers. The five fundamentals of the faith that were determined many years ago at the Niagara Conference, when the people were doing this, and they'd had 14 irreducible minimums, then they couldn't agree on all those. And so they came down to five fundamentals, and books have been written on that. One of the central part is the resurrection. It's irreducible. Without the resurrection, we don't have a faith. Many other things can be disagreed on. We don't agree on a lot of things in the churches and in the world today, but if we differ on the resurrection, we're in big trouble. 1 Corinthians 15, 42 to 54, it's the nature of the resurrection body, how it comes out, how it becomes a spiritual body. Also, it is a body that is literal. It is a real body, like the body that Jesus Christ had when he rose from the dead. And that body will be ours when we enter into eternity. 1 Corinthians 15 is the major chapter that deals with the resurrection. I want to go generally today. That's why I'm not staying at 1 Corinthians 15, because I want you to see the big picture. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 tells us about the resurrection of those who've died in Jesus. Romans chapter 8 connects the resurrection to the Holy Spirit. Philippians chapter 3, Paul expresses his desire to know the power of Christ's resurrection. Romans chapter 4 links the resurrection to justification, stating that Jesus was raised to declare believers righteous. May I add this morning that if you do not believe in the resurrection of Christ, if you do not believe in the resurrection of our bodies, you cannot possibly believe in Jesus Christ. It is an irreducible minimum. You must believe in the resurrection. Jesus said in John chapter 5 and verse number 29, "And they shall come forth, they that have done good, unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil, unto the resurrection of damnation." This verse has been construed and misconstrued to mean a general resurrection, where everybody who dies will remain dead until the end of all time and all function of human life, and then everybody comes out of the graves, and some will go to heaven and some will go to hell. Well, that is a very, very general statement that could be mimicked by people who have absolutely zero Bible knowledge. But if you have Bible knowledge, you will soon discover that the statement that Jesus made here is all-encompassing of his resurrection program. He doesn't delineate that in this verse. He just said some will be raised to life eternal, some will be raised to damnation. So that is true. But I want us to examine that. In the Old Testament, over a 4,000-year period of time, there were three resurrections recorded. So already, going way back to Zarephath up in northern Israel, there was someone who was raised. Then you go down to central Israel in Dothan, somebody was raised. And then you go to Aphek, further north beside the Sea of Sea of Galilee, and somebody else was raised. Those are the only resurrections recorded in the Old Testament. First of all, we see the boy at Zarephath in 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 17 through 22. "And it came to pass after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick, and his sickness was so sore that there was no breath left in him." We would assume that means he died. "And she said unto Elijah, What have I to do with thee, O thou man of God? Art thou come unto me to call my sin to remembrance and to slay my son? And he said unto her," beautiful words, Give me thy son. And he took him out of her bosom and carried him up into a loft where he abode and laid him upon his own bed. And he cried unto the Lord and said, O Lord my God, hast thou also brought evil upon the widow with whom I sojourn by slaying her son? And he stretched himself upon the child three times and cried unto the Lord and said, O Lord my God, I pray thee, let this child's soul come into him again. And the Lord heard the voice of Elijah, and the soul of the child came into him again, and he revived. Folks, this is dynamite. Where have you ever seen a dead person come back to life? Now, you hear hairy stories here and there, but have you ever met someone that actually has been dead? These people in Zarephath had the opportunity to talk to someone who had actually died, been away for a while, and now his soul came back into him. God says, I will grant this for you. We have the woman in Shunem, 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 18 through 37. And when he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon and then died. Now that's either true or false. Fact is that the Bible records this child died. He went in, therefore, and shut the door upon them twain, or upon the two of them, and prayed unto the Lord. And he went up and lay upon the child and put his mouth upon his mouth, kind of a resuscitation thing, and his eyes upon his eyes and his hands upon his hands, and stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child waxed warm. I'd like to see some good artists draw that as a picture. In my mind, it draws pictures. I'm not going to waste any time trying to describe that for you. But you notice here that the flesh of the child waxed warm as the prophet lay upon him. All of a sudden, that cold, lifeless, waxy feeling of the deceased soul from the spirit and body were gone, and there was only flesh, cold as can be. Now that starts to warm up. Amazing resurrection. And then we have an interesting, the most interesting of all, and that is in 2 Kings 13, verses 20 through 21, where we see the resurrection by the bones of Elisha's grave. The prophet had been buried. There's a war going on. We read, and Elisha died, and they buried him, and the bands of the Moabites invaded the land at the coming end of the year, and it came to pass as they were burying a man that, behold, they spied a band of men, and they cast the man into the sepulcher of Elisha. And when the man was let down and touched the bones of Elisha, he revived and stood up on his feet. Wouldn't you think they would put a pause on that war with the Moabites? They see the power of God in giving through dead Elisha the ability to see a man rise from the dead. Now, some people might look at these as legends and fairy tales and things that are way beyond the pale of human imagination. Fact is, God recorded it. And our God is not in the business of giving us anything that's not needful or that is not true. So God is saying that these things happen. It's a precursor to that which is yet to happen. What we do is we go to the Old Testament to see whether anything like this has ever happened before. And that's where you have the three records of it, at Zarephath, at Aphek, and then down at Dothan. This is expanded in the New Testament. The dynamic raising of Jairus' daughter in Mark chapter 5 and verse 41. We read, and he took the damsel by the hand and said unto her, Talitha kumai, which is being interpreted, damsel, I say unto thee, arise. What do you think will happen when Jesus Christ comes to a deceased body and says to that deceased body, says, arise? It will rise up every time. It will never fail. You and I could wish to do so, but we can't. If we could, we would have brought a lot of people back to life, but that's not God's program. God's program is appointed unto man once to die, but after this, the judgment. So there cannot be a judgment on that which doesn't exist. So death does not cause cessation of existence. This young woman, this young girl, should I say, was raised dynamically by simply one word, arise. Mark chapter 5, verse 41. And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was at the age of 12, and they were astonished with a great astonishment. What's your living room look like if the dead person lying there comes back to life and walks around in the room? You're just simply amazed that you'd be breathless. There's the deliberate raising of the widow's son at Nain, Luke 7, 13 through 15. Very moving story. This is a woman who's lost her husband. She's lost her other child. Now the last one has died. Now she's a widow indeed. But as the bier passes and they're headed towards the burial, which they did very quickly in those days, they still do in Israel, they try to bury them the same day that they die. There's no such thing as a wake and sitting at a funeral home and weeping and crying for days and all that. Didn't happen. Person died, they were put into the cave, they're put into the tomb. They were on their way. Body was barely cold. He had just died, the last one to be buried. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her. God is not really interested in death. He doesn't love death. He loves life. He had compassion on her, and he said unto her, weep not. Why not? This is a funeral. Her only son, last son, has died. She's left deprived now. And he came and touched the bier, and they that bare him stood still. And he said, young man, I say unto thee, arise. And he that was dead sat up and began to speak, and he delivered him to his mother. Mommy had a good day. She was sad. She was brokenhearted. Everything was gone from her now, and now her son is given back to her. Can you imagine the hamburger she went and barbecued for him, and the turkey she baked for him, and apple pie and ice cream. She served him lots of that. I know she did. It was a reunion. So wonderful. I want you to know that resurrection is such a delightful subject because it indicates reunion. All the dead in Christ shall rise again. There's the delightful resurrection of Lazarus. What a beautiful story in John chapter 11, 38 through 44. Jesus, therefore, again groaning in himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, take away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, said unto him, Lord. Like, folks, what happens when you're in a warm climate and you put a body into a cave and that body has been there for 4 days? What happens? Exactly. That's what Martha said. By now, he is stinking. There's nothing like a human body beginning to decay. It is horrible. They have to use special devices. I learned in real estate that when they find a house where somebody had died or committed suicide and the body hadn't been found for a week or two, it's a horrendous scene to clean up. And they bring special units that put a special chemical into the room, and it has to be there maybe for a week or two because nothing else would clean the smell of what it's like when a human body begins to decay. It's not a very nice thing. And she said, you know, he's stinky by now. For he's been dead for 4 days. Jesus said unto her, said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldst see the glory of God? My challenge to you, folks, did Jesus not say that we should believe? He did. And he said, they would see the glory of God. So will we. Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. He knew that the Father in heaven would hear him all times, but here's the reason he prayed. And I knew that thou hearest me always, but because of the people which stand by, I said it that they may believe that thou hast sent me. It's a proof of his deity. It's a proof of the fact that Jesus Christ came from God. And he said, the reason I connect with heaven at this critical time is so that the people around, they're weeping. Lazarus is a very, very popular guy in Bethany, and there's a large crowd of people, and they're weeping, they're crying, and they're hurt because their loved one is gone 4 days. I don't know how you can cry for 4 days, but some people can. But Jesus said, I want them to believe. I want them to know something very, very real. And when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, and he said, Lazarus, come forth. We had a missionary years ago. His name was Lazarus. And he said something to the effect that when Jesus was at the tomb and called out, "Lazarus, come forth," only Lazarus came forth. Think about it. If Jesus would have been standing there by the grave and said, "Come forth out of the grave," all of the graves would have burst wide open because that's what's going to happen someday. But he wanted Lazarus, specifically one person, Lazarus come forth, and he that was dead came forth. How can a dead man get up and walk again? He can't. But God's intervention in a miraculous way, he can. How can I overcome my sin, my habit, everything that is about me? How? If God can raise the dead, he can take this away from us as well. Anyway, back to the text. And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. Jesus said unto them, "Loose him and let him go." Untie him. There's the death-defying resurrection of many during the crucifixion, Matthew 27, 52, and Matthew 27, 52 and 53. Just look at this marvelous scene. And the graves were opened. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, had been crucified for our sin. He died for us. Now the graves are open, and many bodies of the saints which slept arose. Who are they? We have no identity. How long were they? We have no way of knowing. All we know is God had a select number of people that he decided would come back to life. Why? They're going to die again. It's not that they were raised to life and taken up to heaven. They were raised in a physical body, just like the other three in the Old Testament. They died again. So these would as well, but it was to show that something happened when Christ was crucified that could not be compared to anything else in the world. Nothing could match it, because many people were crucified, two on that day, one on one side, the other one on the other side. And crucifixion was a common thing that happened in that day in Israel, in the Romans, by the Roman provinces. It happened a lot, but this would be a unique crucifixion. This would be the Son of God, and what would happen is that the power, the dynamic of this resurrection would open the graves, and many of the bodies that were buried in those graves came forth out of those graves. They came out of the graves after his resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared unto many. What a day in Jerusalem. The delivering resurrection of Christ in Matthew chapter 28. And in the end of the Sabbath, it began to dawn toward the first day of the week, came Mary Magdalene, the other Mary, to see the sepulchre. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for the angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat upon it. His countenance was like lightning, and his raiment white as snow. And for fear of him, the keepers did shake and became as dead men. And the angel answered and said unto the women, "Fear not ye, for I know that you seek Jesus, which was crucified. He is not here." Folks, we celebrate this at Easter. Call it Passover, call it Resurrection Day, call it whatever you want. The world is accustomed to Easter. I call it that. Nothing like it. Nothing can duplicate the resurrection of Christ. Do you know why we gather here today? We gather here in tradition to follow what the disciples did. On the first day of the week, which is Sunday, they would meet together and they would say, "Our blessed Lord has risen. He is risen indeed. Christ came back from the dead. He is alive." That's what they celebrated 2,000 years ago. Why do we come to church? Do we come to celebrate the resurrection? Do we come to reflect on the resurrection? Do we think about the resurrection? He is not here. He's not a dead savior. He is alive. The only leader of any kind of faith in God that is alive today is Jesus Christ, except the one that is still living, and they will die. There's a Dorcas account of resurrection in Acts chapter 9. I told you it's a very wide picture in the Bible, not just one isolated verse. Acts 9:36, we read, "Now there was at Joppa A certain disciple named Tabitha, which by interpretation is called Dorcas. So this woman was full of good works and alms deeds, which she did. And it came to pass in those days that she was sick and died. When they had washed, they laid her in an upper chamber. And forasmuch as Lydda was nigh to Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent unto him two men, desiring him that he would not delay to come to them. Then Peter arose and went with them. When he was come, they brought him into the upper chamber, and all the widows stood by him weeping and showing the coats and the garments which Dorcas made while she was still with them. Something she's done, her days are over, it's all over with, and they're weeping for her. Peter put them forth. He said, please stand outside here. He kneeled down and prayed, and turning him to the body, he said, Tabitha, arise. She opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up. Now, it's not God in the Old Testament raising up. Now, it's not Jesus in the New Testament raising. Now, here's apostolic authority. Apostolic authority conferred upon the first apostles. No one else today is an apostle. No one has the power to raise people from the dead today. Only God can do that. In this case, the apostolic authority was there to prove again that the message they were proclaiming was authentic, that it was about the living Christ who rose from the dead. And he gave her his hand and lifted her up, and when he had called the saints and the widows, presented her alive. And when it was known throughout all Joppa, many believed in the Lord. Why not everybody? Not everybody, because some people are just downright stubborn. That's all to it. Some people can see all of the evidence that there is, but they're just stubborn. They say, no, I'm just not going to do it. And that's their own fate. But thank God for the many who believed. There were so many that said, wow, there's something about this we have not known in our natural life. We need to know something about the resurrection power.